From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, will Texas reject the billions of dollars Obamacare would bring to the state to improve health care?
Is it the state's fault that we have 23-some percent people uninsured? I would submit no, if it is not the state's fault. Then is it the state's responsibility to provide care to those people? And I would say also no.
It's not just a private crazy photo when it goes online. Revenge porn is a scourge, and one Texas lawyer is trying to shut it down.
They are humiliated, they are frightened, they are scared, they are harassed. Most of them change all their personal habits, they become hermits.
And turning Texas blue. Some say it's a fantasy, but the Democrats are mounting a well-funded campaign to try and make it a reality.
In a couple of presidential cycles, you'll be on election night. You'll be announcing that we're calling the 38 electoral votes of Texas for the Democratic nominee for president.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Governor Rick Perry is adamant Texas will not make Medicaid available to more Texans by taking part in a federal program. But recently, other Republican governors in Nevada and Arizona have changed their minds. They're saying they can't ignore the billions of federal dollars they'd be losing by opting out. In Austin, some lawmakers are also challenging Perry's decision. KRA's Shelley Koffler takes a look at the debate, beginning with a visit to the Greenville office of a senator who also uses a stethoscope.
So how are you today?
I've had better days.
You had better days.
I went back in the emergency room again Tuesday.
At a time when many Texas doctors will not accept Medicaid patients because the reimbursement rate is so low, Dr. Bob Duell treats them.
Doctors, believe it or not, can take blood pressures.
One-fourth of his patients, mostly children and pregnant women, are covered by Medicaid.
That's not too bad now.
Medicaid isn't currently available to most other adults in Texas, but that could change if the state reverses course and joins the federal program that allows more lower-income people to sign up. Adults and children in a family of three with income of about $25,000 a year would qualify.
I don't think we should expand Medicaid. The federal government is $16 trillion-plus in debt, so they can't afford it. We can't afford it.
Dr. Bob Duell is also Republican State Senator Duell. He recites a long list of reasons he thinks Governor Perry made the right choice. First of all, Duell thinks greater access to Medicaid would create chaos for those with private insurance.
You have smaller pools for the rest of the folks who aren't eligible for Medicaid, and that will increase the insurance premiums and costs for everybody in the state.
Then there's the federal funding, the deal Perry rejected. In exchange for Texas spending just over $3 billion during the first 3 years, the federal government would give the state nearly $27 billion, nine times as much. The new money would buy health coverage for 1.5 million uninsured Texans. Duell, however, questions whether Washington will keep its promise to always pay at least 90% of what it would cost to insure the new patients. And he has a philosophical objection. Duell thinks making the Medicaid program bigger is wrong.
Is it the state's fault that we have 23-some percent people uninsured? I would submit no. If it is not the state's fault, then is it the state's responsibility to provide care to those people? And I would say also no. Many uninsured can afford insurance, and they just choose not to have it.
Senator Rodney Ellis, a Houston Democrat, disagrees.
I think government has an obligation to do its best to give as many people access to health care as humanly possible.
That's why Senator Ellis has filed a bill that calls for voters to decide whether Medicaid eligibility is expanded in Texas.
It's just hard for me to understand any scenario on God's green earth, on being able to justify denying health care to 1.5 million people in Texas because you think you can somehow defy the law that is in place. Instead of having members of the Texas House and the Senate and the governor wrangle and argue about what we should or should not do, let the voters of Texas decide it.
The voters in Senator Duell's community of Greenville don't agree on the issue either.
Well, I believe that we should not take the money.
At Landon's Winery, three friends nodded agreement as Price Bradshaw explained why Texas should let the federal government keep the money.
Think how hard it is to get in to see doctors today, and think what it's going to be like in time to come. Another part of it is that I believe that the source of funding for this so-called Affordable Health Care Act is the taxpayers. We're going to be paying for it today, tomorrow, and the day after, as long as we're here.
But across the street at a used car lot turned flea market, vendors said greater access to Medicaid would be a lifeline to many working Texans.
We should do it. Absolutely.
Rick Francis works alongside Ann New, who says her self-employed sister needs the help.
She can't get coverage because she can't afford $400 or $500 a month. So she's fallen through the crack. And it upsets me that she's worked all of her life, and because she owns a business that doesn't have more than four employees, she doesn't have insurance. And so, therefore, she goes without.
Senator Duell says Texas can care for more of the uninsured without more Medicaid. He wants to increase Medicaid payments to doctors so they can afford to provide more charity care. And he thinks more churches could step up.
To me, it's not a government function as much as it should be a church function.
But Senator Ellis says Texas needs to bank on the big federal bucks. He doesn't believe charitable doctors or churches will make up for the $27 billion Texas would get from Washington. Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
In the legislative session, Texas lawmakers are calling into question Governor Rick Perry's pet funds. One of them, the Texas Enterprise Fund, is used to lure businesses into the state from other states. A report released this week by the D.C.-based research group Good Jobs First says the fund is wasting millions of dollars and is being used to pirate jobs from other states. The report, called the Job Creation Shell Game, says the fund should be used to focus on developing truly new jobs. Greg LeRoy is with Good Jobs First.
Data show that the net effect of relocations into Texas, at least for the years we could get them, the first 7 years of the Perry administration, those effects are microscopic, as they are for any state, plus or minus. You know, in any given year, some states have a little bit of net inflow and a little bit of net outflow of jobs, but compared to their overall job pictures, it's always, you know, microscopic, hundredths or tenths of 1% a year. All the job creation action comes from startups and expansions, and that's where we think states should be really devoting their energy and their money.
And Texas is definitely devoting money to this. We have the Texas Enterprise Fund, which is a big pot of money. It's been criticized in the past because it's been connected to some of Rick Perry's cronies and political donors. So what's wrong with that, using state dollars to bring jobs to Texas?
Well, you know, it's a bad policy by several measures. It's really unfair to companies in the state that are already there and account for virtually all the job creation, the startups, the expansions. There is the pay-to-play situation that has been documented by Texans for Public Justice there. It's not cost-effective. You know, you're putting a lot of eggs in a few corporate baskets. But the big picture is, again, these are tiny impacts on the state economy at very high cost.
Texas is deliberately poaching jobs from other states. And you're taking the big view of the nation and saying it's not really adding jobs to the nation. But when you live in a small town and you hear that we're getting jobs from somebody who wanted to close shop in California because the taxes were too high, and they come to Texas where the taxes are low, you know, it sounds good to you because you're going to get a job, or you're just going to boost your local town's economy.
Sure. We're not saying that companies shouldn't move or expand in different states than they're currently located. We are suggesting that states and cities compete for things that benefit all employers. Compete on the quality of your workforce. Compete on the quality of your schools and your infrastructure and the other things that benefit all employers. You know, Texas has a lot of things going for it. It's got a young population. It's got marvelously smart people graduating from their university systems. You got, you know, quality of life and amenities in many of your cities and rural areas. Those are things that you should play up and that benefit all employers, and you're not putting a lot of eggs in any one basket when you play to those strengths.
So is this a race to the bottom? Do you think that states will have to play the same game in order to stay competitive?
It is kind of a race to the bottom, or another term that game theorists use is called a net loss game. That is, it's not just zero sum. It's not just jobs moving from one state to Texas. It's a net loss game, because what happens then is one state loses tax base, and then Texas forgives the tax base. So there's less of a tax base available to support public services. And that means only two things can happen. Either every other homeowner and business person has to pay higher taxes to keep, you know, quality of services level, or everybody gets lousier public services, you know, more potholes, more crowded schools, higher tuition, whatever the measure is, or some of both. Yeah, there's no such thing as free growth.
Greg LeRoy of Good Jobs First is the author of a study that finds that the Texas Enterprise Fund should not be used to move jobs from other states into Texas, but should be focused on developing new industries and true job creation in the state. The report is available on our website, tpr.org. Sexting is the act of sending sexually explicit photographs primarily between mobile phones. A 2012 study conducted by the University of Utah Department of Psychology found that 1 in 5 American teenagers admitted to sending a sexually explicit image of themselves via cell phone. Twice as many said they had received a sexting image. And of those receiving such a photograph, over 25% said they had forwarded it on to others. And now there's revenge porn. Women who say a former lover is posting online nude photos or video of them, and those images and detailed information about the women is showing up on porn websites. A Beaumont attorney is taking on the revenge porn industry. John S. Morgan has filed a class action lawsuit for women who are victims of revenge porn.
Well, revenge porn is an industry that has unfortunately grown into an international industry, in which the hosters of the site, the people who own the actual sites, publish intimate photographs and personal information, usually about women, without their permission and without even attempting to obtain their consent. And I've also found that at least the site that I'm engaging in litigation against has published some underage photos as well.
The porn industry lives in the shadows. How do you take them on in the courtroom?
Well, that's one thing. One thing that we found is that the registered agent is a fictitious name and a fictitious address. I can tell you, though, that I know what I'm looking for, and I'm going to find these people. This is different from the pornographic industry per se, because the purpose of this particular type of revenge porn is to humiliate, to harm, and harass. And there's just no consent at all, and there's no attempt to obtain consent. And the people who do this generally are cowards who always hide their true identities.
But someone is making money from this, and I guess so if there's a money trail, then there's a trail.
That's what we're going to do. I want to, as I've stated before, I want to squeeze the purse strings. And if you shut off, if you stop these sites from being profitable, you can shut down the industry.
Now, you're representing several dozen women from Texas who have been victimized by this. Can you kind of tell me what the experience is like for them?
The experience is absolutely terrible for them. I couldn't imagine how difficult it is for these women until I met with them and heard the stories. It's unbelievable the effect it's had on their lives. They are humiliated. They are frightened. They are scared. They are harassed. Most of them change all their personal habits. They become hermits. Many of them are afraid to go outside. They are afraid to be recognized in grocery stores. Some women have lost their jobs, even though they've done nothing wrong. Other women feel that people recognize them, and they're making lewd comments. They are assuming things about their morals, which are not true. And it's really vindictive and vicious what's been done to these women. Every one of them that I represent and the ones that I've spoken to have not yet joined are really emotionally devastated.
From what I've gathered is that on some of these sites that there's a lot of personal information about the women, and they're constantly being updated, so it seems like they're being stalked by the internet. What a way to live and being so vulnerable.
Oh, it's horrible. They are most definitely being stalked. I've heard the term cyber rape, and I think that is accurate. I mean, these people are predators, and this is really sick and disgusting behavior. There is absolutely no redeeming social characteristics to this type of industry at all.
Some people say that free speech or the rights of the internet, which people say there's you can get away with anything on the internet, that trumps the women's rights.
You know, I disagree, because the issue is consent. The issue is consenting adults. If consenting adults choose to make explicit or pornographic type of photographs and no one is coerced or forced, that's an entirely different industry than stealing or absconding with photos that came from marriage or came from personal relationships that were years ago or were taken even when the women didn't know they were being photographed. What is occurring in the revenge porn industry totally is dehumanizing, because none of the women on this site are given a choice, are given a human moral choice. They are chosen as victims. They are relentlessly harassed and stalked.
What happens when a woman realizes that she's on one of these websites and she contacts the webmaster and pleads with them to take down this image?
Well, I can tell you that that's the typical response which has occurred nationwide in this industry. And my experience has shown that the following pattern occurs. Usually the website first says no. If the woman becomes persistent, they will ask for money, as in this particular site, Texan.com. They say, fine, pay us. And the problem is they're extorting money from these victims. So if the victim then pays them, number one, the victim is given credit card information that these basic criminals can use for their own use otherwise. And also, what happens is often when they get the payment, these sites do not take down the photos, or they take them down for a short while and put them back up. So unless something is done legislatively, the only other option is to go after the site and the owners and to try to expose them and make them financially accountable. Because what I have found is women acting one at a time, trying to get the photos removed, have not been successful.
Is it true that sometimes there are hackers who deliberately go into people's home computers looking for this type of material and post it from there?
Yes. Many of the photographs at issue, I can tell you that my clients were amazed at the source, where they came from. They were shocked. And also, some of the photographs, the women didn't know that they were being photographed at the time the photo was taken.
This seems like a widespread issue. Are other people following to see how you do this, and they want to follow suit? Or what's going to be the outcome?
Before I filed suit, I spent quite a bit of time studying and reading the industry and seeing what other cases have done. Okay, and I've learned that right now federal law doesn't provide a remedy. I'm hoping that one of the things that can be accomplished through this is that we can get Congress to stop its endless bickering and maybe pass some useful legislation in this area. But right now it appears, by looking at the cases that have been filed and the people who are working against this industry, they are all, you know, we're all applying lawyers, various state laws, as I'm doing, Texas laws. You know, my goal is to shut down the site. First of all, you have to find the people. Then you can shut down the site. And then another hurdle is to try to obtain all the photographic information before it's transferred to another site, because typically these people do that.
They could go offshore.
Absolutely. I mean, these people are dreadful people, because who else would engage in this type of activity unless you have no respect for other people? I mean, that's the type of mentality you're looking at. Now, one thing I want to accomplish here, and I'm going to push this very hard, and I haven't seen this done anywhere, is I want to go after the subscribers, the members, the people who pay monthly to obtain all the enhanced contents and digital content, knowing that all these photographs are designed to humiliate and harass, and that there's no permission from the women. So I want to go after the subscribers.
Could publish their names.
You know what? I'd like to make it public record. One thing about litigation, it's public record. And I do not believe anyone who subscribes to a site like this with the knowledge that these women are victims, with the knowledge that the photos are not there by permission, I do not believe those people deserve any right of privacy, and I don't believe there's any First Amendment rights that they have. And again, that's very different if someone wants to subscribe to a legitimate adult website that complies with the federal record-keeping requirements and that involves consent. This is an industry that's just vile and despicable by any standard.
John S. Morgan is a lawyer in Beaumont who is fighting the revenge porn industry. His lawsuit focuses on a site where ex-boyfriends and ex-husbands have posted private sexual photos of their exes without their permission in retaliation for breakups. 23 women across Texas have signed on to the suit, which will be filed in Galveston County. Since delivering the DNC keynote speech, San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro has become a national political figure. And this past weekend, he was on CBS's Face the Nation, along with his twin brother, Congressman Joaquin Castro. Asked by Bob Schieffer about the political future of Texas, Mayor Castro made this prediction.
In a couple of presidential cycles, you'll be on election night. You'll be announcing that we're calling the 38 electoral votes of Texas for the Democratic nominee for president. It's changing. It's going to become a purple state and then a blue state because of the demographics, because of the population growth of folks from outside of Texas, and because, unfortunately, the Republican Party has gone so far to the right that they're losing the business community. They're losing the middle.
Given the data that Texas has not elected a Democrat for statewide office since 1994, that's a bold statement. And Democrats have been making predictions along those lines for years, but there has been little to no growth in the Texas Democratic base to back it up. But now, the National Democratic Party is preparing to mount an offensive in Texas called Battleground Texas that will pump millions of dollars into organizing the left in the state. Alexander Burns wrote about Battleground Texas this week on Politico.com.
The idea here, it's a new group called Battleground Texas, helmed by a guy named Jeremy Byrd, who was the national field director for Barack Obama's reelection campaign. The idea is not so much about, let's win the governor's office in 2014 or a Senate seat in 2016, as much as trying to put together the resources and the people to make an investment over a couple different election cycles at really building up Democratic infrastructure that, as you know, has really decayed in Texas.
I'm seeing little groups popping up across the state in some odd places, small towns in a panhandle, trying to organize Democrats. Is that a product of this?
I think it's probably a product of the same sense among Democrats that they've got to get more organized than they have been. You know, national Democrats have looked at Texas for a while as a state that just demographically ought to be moving their way. But if you look at the way Texas performs in elections, it's really lagging behind the population change. You know, you talk to Democratic strategists in Austin, in Washington, they say that's because so much of the Latino population in Texas that has become so potentially politically influential just isn't as engaged in elections as they could be.
Texas is huge. I know that's a news flash, but it's going to take a lot of money to turn things around in Texas.
It is. And, you know, the real first test of this group and other groups that are involved on the state level in trying to put together a Democratic operation statewide, the first test in 2013-2014 is going to be, can they put together really a pretty big pile of money? My understanding is there are some folks in the state, particularly in the trial lawyer community, who are interested in making a real investment here. But, you know, I think there's a recognition of the fact that we're talking not about hundreds of thousands of dollars or even millions, but tens of millions of dollars to make this really work.
They're going to have to buy media to get the message out because there's not a lot of friendly free media for Democrats who want to explain their positions.
Well, that's sort of the dual challenge here, that on the one hand, this group that I reported on today, Battleground Texas, is really less about advertising and messaging than it is about organizing, registration, voter mobilization. But in order to have a competitive statewide campaign, of course, you need to have a mobilized electorate. You also need to have a strong candidate running a strong and well-funded campaign and having a real presence on the air. And this is the cycle that Democrats have been trapped in Texas for a while, is that they'll recruit someone good or someone who seems like they could be good to run statewide, someone like Bill White in the 2010 governor's race. They'll put in a couple $1 million, and then the Republicans will open up their war chest, which has just been building and building and building over the last 15 years, and they get swamped.
Well, you know, Bill White, He's a good guy, but he really was not very exciting, not a very communicative person. As also in your article, you talk about the former General Sanchez, and he was pretty much a political neophyte, not really. So we haven't seen a strong Democrat come forward in Texas.
So folks right now are looking particularly at these two sort of up-and-comers. Of course, Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio, who's really a sort of a person who's very much on the radar of national Democrats, and State Senator Wendy Davis from Fort Worth, who, of course, won a very difficult re-election in 2012. And folks in the state and nationally view her as somebody who, if she wanted to run statewide in 2014, could probably be more competitive than anybody else at this stage. Winning is a different bar to clear.
And Mayor Castro, he just came out this week and made it clear that he would run for re-election for mayor in San Antonio, but that doesn't mean that he won't run for a larger office in 2 years from now or what have you. So, but he, with him being on the national stage, we see him on the Sunday talk shows. He's got star power.
He does, and that's part of why he can afford to abide his time a little bit. That Texas looks like a state right now that if Democrats put in a lot of money and caught a couple lucky breaks, maybe they could win something statewide. But it's really still a stretch. 4 years from now, 6 years from now, Julian Castro is still going to be a young man, and the state will probably be more favorable to him. So he can afford to take his time.
How big of a prize is Texas for the Democrats?
I don't think that you can possibly overstate how much Democrats would like to be competitive in Texas. It would be the equivalent of Republicans suddenly being really competitive in California. It would just knock out the legs from under the other party's national electoral map strategy. If Democrats manage to make Texas a state like Florida or even like North Carolina, which is, you know, a competitive state in presidential elections but still leans to the Republicans, if Texas moved closer to that status, it would just be exponentially harder for the GOP to win a national election.
So we're talking about the presidency and the Electoral College, but also I guess the congressional delegation from Texas is huge. And if get maps that favored Democrats, that would be shaping national politics as well.
It would be. And that's you know, part of the reason why Democrats are so focused on a statewide competition is that the state legislative and congressional maps are so favorable to Republicans the way they've been drawn that it's really just going to be difficult, you know, between now and the next time the districts get drawn in 2020, for anybody to make really big gains or losses one way or another. But sure, if they were able to do in Texas what happened in California, which is nonpartisan redistricting to create congressional districts that are competitive, then you see much more of a free-for-all.
Castro has said 2020, definitely Texas would be a blue state. What's the conventional thinking?
You know, the thinking among Democrats is that, you know, maybe 2020 you're looking at a competitive state, but only if in the meantime you're putting in the energy and financial resources to sort of set the table for that. On the Republican side, the feeling really is, you know, we've been hearing about this from Democrats for a while. You can go back to the 2002 governor's race, Democrats talking about putting a lot of money into turning out low propensity voters. It doesn't happen. So, you know, I think there's a lot of justifiable skepticism from the GOP that the state is changing as much as Democrats think it is.
How much is this about the Latino vote?
Overwhelmingly, it's about the Latino vote.
Alexander Burns is a reporter for Politico.com. He's covering Battleground Texas, a well-funded effort by the National Democratic Party to turn Texas from a red state into a blue one. You can find that article on our website, tpr.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. To give us feedback on the program, you can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you can also comment right on our website at tpr.org. There are also past Texas Matters programs for listening on our website. And we are available as a podcast on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.